Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
When did you get the flu shot?
In late October,
okay.
Early November.
Because sometimes getting the flu shot can induce flu-like symptoms.
No, this is months and months later. Yeah. So I missed out on all the things. Like, Michael went to, if you're going to go to your first game at Cameron Indoor, how about going to North Carolina?
Pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you describe, Michael, who didn't even know I was ill.
You didn't call me.
Well,
I'm
not going to tell you I'm ill. I'm not going to say, why don't you call?
I mean, if it's
raining, call me three or four times a day.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
Alrighty then. Plausibly live and from an undisclosed, as yet, third floor location in Chevy Chase, Maryland. We're on the air with David Aldridge and Liz Clark and Michael Kornheiser. Nigel's running the board. John Heilemann will join us. Now we can talk about Michael Flynn, who's no longer the National Security Advisor. He resigned late last night. And Adam Ferrara, who's in California, is going to join us. He's appearing apparently on Criminal Minds.
I believe so, yes.
Criminal Minds, so we will talk about that. There's a lot of things to start with. I'm going to go local to begin with. If you remember about 4 or 5 days ago, before I got sick, I mentioned that Sheena Parveen, and this is really local, I understand, that Sheena Parveen was making a move, like it's sort of in a horse race, you're at the top of the stretch, and then one horse just
and
blows
Sheena
one.
Parveen on the outside.
Sheena Parveen was, I felt, making a move on Chuck Bell. They were splitting time, but I predicted that eventually what would happen is Sheena Parveen would be in the studio and Chuck Bell would be in the 4x4 on a lonely road in Gaithersburg telling you how much rain or snow was falling. This morning, Sheena Parveen in the studio, Chuck Bell at the Tidal Basin. And it's not like the cherry blossoms are out, kids. Chuck Bell, the exile begins. Yes. I'm just telling you, this is what's going to happen, and it is beginning right now. There was a game last night on TNT. David works for TNT.
I do.
David was at the game, but somehow David has achieved such exalted status that he just goes to games and no longer has to work. Like, you were not working the Oklahoma City, Washington game.
Yeah, Kristen Ledlow, the fabulous Kristen Ledlow.
Even though you live here.
I don't do assignments, Tony. I just go where they tell me.
So we're gonna talk about this, and it's important. I think there's a context. There's going to be a lot of cheerleading in Washington about how well the Wizards played last night, and the Wizards played very well. There's going to be that same repetitive theme of John Wall saying, love me more than you love me. It's fine. He's having a very, very great year. And all of these things are true. But two things happened last night that I think are consequential. And that's why I'm glad David is here. Because this is the macro view, not the micro view. Over the weekend, there was that rare thing in the NBA. A very significant and important to both teams' basketball game in the regular season.
Uh-huh.
This was Golden State with Kevin Durant for the first time at Oklahoma City.
Correct.
And the fans were jacked up, and the players on both sides were really, really jacked up. Look what happened to both those teams last night.
Sure.
They got crushed.
They did.
Golden State got beat. Denver has no players, and the players they have didn't play last night. Denver made 23 threes. Golden State was in no emotion. This happens. No emotional position 48 hours after that game that meant a lot to them. Mm-hmm. Oklahoma City got crushed by Golden State, but that game meant a lot to them, and it meant a tremendous amount to Russell Westbrook.
Mm-hmm.
And Russell Westbrook was a ghost last night.
Yes.
Tell the people how this happened.
Well, it's a schedule loss.
You could have made money on this.
Sure,
on these. You could have made money.
I could see that coming. That wasn't surprising at all in any way. If you pay attention, you know how much emotion was expended Saturday night. You know, even though it wasn't an especially close game, there was still a lot of energy, a lot of emotion, and you just knew the next game, no matter who they were playing, they were going to get their doors blown off. And The Denver game.
Even at home. Both teams were on the road, but it doesn't matter.
The Denver game was mildly surprising, but Denver's got some players. They're just not, you know, it doesn't fit, but they've got talent. And the Wizards have been playing great for 2 months now. So,
they
mean, it's not a surprise anymore. They're good.
So Russell Westbrook ends up with a line. Now, he only played 30 minutes because
they were down 35 in the third quarter.
It's 101 to 74 after three.
Yeah.
So you know, say, well, Westbrook didn't score anything in the fourth quarter. Well, nobody plays.
Yeah,
this is like, never use the statistic. If you want to compare, for whatever foolish reason, this Isaiah Thomas, mm-hmm. not the other Isaiah Thomas, to Steph Curry, and you want to say, well, one guy's great in the fourth quarter. Well, the other guy doesn't play in the fourth quarter because they're up by 70.
Yeah.
Okay, so statistics can make fools of us all. But in this particular case, Russell Westbrook, who's having the greatest individual season of anybody in the league,
mm-hmm.
17 points, 4 assists, and 4 rebounds.
Yeah.
That's probably his worst game.
One of them, I'm sure. Yeah.
Because his heart's not in it. Everything... Wow. He has.
His heart's not in it, and his team missed 24
in a row.
Straight shots.
Yeah.
Which is impossible.
That's not just defense.
No.
It's just not. Because that the home game against Golden State meant so much.
Sure.
And they got bombed out of that game.
They did.
And so Westbrook.
Yeah.
What do you think, David? What do you think? Westbrook, in his core,
mm-hmm.
when he looks at Durant now,
mm-hmm.
and he understands that Durant's going to win, and he's not going to.
That's right.
What do you think he feels
about Durant?
About the whole sort of circumstance of it.
I don't. I think his issue with Durant was not that he left, and it's not even really that he left for Golden State. Although I'm sure it bothers him on some level that it did. It's just that he never told him.
Right.
That's all. I mean, they were never friends. They were never, and I don't mean in the sense that they hated each other. They just weren't friends. You're not friends with everybody you work with. You know, some people you become friends with because you become friends with them. Durant was much closer to Harden and Serge Ibaka because they were all single and young and had the same interests and wanted to go out after games and eat and drink and all that. And Russell's had the same girlfriend for 12 years. And he didn't want to go out. He wanted to hang out with his girlfriend. It's just different. It's not bad. It's just different. So they never were that close. But because they were both so good together and they had achieved so much together as leaders of that team over 8 years, Russell felt like he was owed some sort of communication.
I think he was.
And he was. And he's right.
I think Durant is the antagonist in this.
Yeah.
And that Russell Westbrook is the aggrieved party, which mm-hmm. doesn't mean that I don't think that Kevin Durant made the exact right move, because I do. And I think he wanted to get away from Russell Westbrook, mm-hmm. who never passed him the ball, and in a contract year would never have passed him the ball, because that's what I believe to be true.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to tell him.
You have to tell him.
You have to give him a heads up.
Everybody lives in L.A. This is not, you know, everybody's got a house in L.A. now. So you say, where are you? I got to come to the house. And if Russell says, you don't have to come to the house, just tell me. Then you just tell him on the phone. But you have to reach out to him. You can't find out in a text and on the Players Tribune like the rest of us did. You guess not. Come on. You can't do that. You know? So that's where Russell's anger comes from. And I think justifiably so.
Me too. I also think he will go to the Los Angeles Lakers the moment he's contractually eligible to do so.
Well, it's going to be an interesting summer for Oklahoma City, because this is the first summer really since they've been to Oklahoma City, and it's been 10 years now, where they're going to have to recruit people. They've never had to recruit anybody before because they always had Durant and Westbrook. Didn't have to recruit anybody. You just filled in. I need a piece here and a piece here, and you go get it. Now they got to recruit. They got to go get people to come to Oklahoma City for the first time.
That's hard.
It's not easy.
Yeah.
It's not easy. And so it'll be very interesting to see what they do this summer in terms of talent acquisition.
I always thought Billy Donovan, I never understood taking that job. Because you knew that within 2 years, both of your best players could leave.
No, but again, Tony, there's 73 things that had to happen in order for him to be in Golden State. And they all happened in order. It was an impossible perfect storm. They're up 3-1 against Golden State. That series is over.
So you don't think he would have gone?
No, he wouldn't have gone if they had beaten Golden State. If they had gotten to the finals, there's no way he leaves. And if Golden State, who's up 3-1 in the finals, wins the finals, he doesn't go to Golden State. And if there isn't $24 billion just suddenly injected in this one-time deal into the system for the new TV contract, he doesn't go to Golden State because they don't have the money to offer him. So all these things had to happen in order for him to be at Golden State. It was a perfect storm.
That's why he's not in Washington then.
Yeah. Yeah, among other things. I mean, can you imagine if the Wizards had had this season last season?
Hmm. Oh, yeah, they would have been more attractive.
They get a meeting, I think.
Maybe. Maybe they get a meeting. Maybe. All right, let's move on to something else, which is the University of Connecticut women's team.
How about that?
Has gone to 100 straight. They beat the number 6-ranked South Carolina team last night. They beat them by 11. They didn't beat them, pounded them like they usually do, but they beat them double figures, and the game was not it was not a threatened situation in this game. Liz, we talked about this yesterday on PTI, Wilbon and I. Mm. Is the 100, which is more important, do you think? The 100, this number, or winning a national championship?
A national championship or a string of them?
However you want to define that.
I mean,
is the 100 persuasive to you? It's the longest streak ever.
Because of the number of national championships, the success, the sustained level of excellence of this program, the 100 to me doesn't get its normal due. It's just like one in a sea of kind of eye-popping stats about this dynasty. I actually did look at this game last night because of the prospect of 100. And I mean, on some level, I kept thinking about the Patriots. And for all the attention on Brady, it's a lot Belichick. It's a team that is going to win whether they have a roster that just crushes people. They can miss their quarterback for four games and come back and win the Super Bowl. And to me, Connecticut is like that under Auriemma. This isn't their best team. My impression is their bench isn't the greatest. An 11-point win for them is kind of a squeaker,
I think. Yeah, it is.
You know, but it's just, you have to just stand back and marvel at every year they reload, they do it again, and you sense it has to do with the expectation of the way you prepare, the way you practice, that you win. I come to this school to do nothing but win. Mm-hmm. And 100 in a row is eye-popping, but so many things that they have achieved are that as well.
I'm the 100, they could go to 200. I mean, they could.
Good.
The 100 is less meaningful for me than national championships. Because the only time, and they'll play anybody anywhere, and they do, but if they play 40 games a year, there's only four or five of them that they're ever even threatened in. They're just much better than everybody else. So for me, where you do get threatened would be in the tournament. It's possible that the last two games of the tournament are going to be tough games. So for me, it's they now have four championships in a row. Last year when they won, Breonna Stewart won four in a row and was most valuable player of the tournament four times in a row. The championships are more impressive to me than the number.
Well, I'm certainly not going to quibble with that, but it just struck me. It's interesting to me coming right on the heels of the NBA discussion about what is inevitable after expending so much emotional energy and investing so much in a game that means so much. It's to be expected a drop-off. Yet you don't see that in Connecticut, unless an 11-point win is a drop-off. But you just do not see that.
They're really good.
No, it's phenomenal. It's phenomenal. And I hope somebody challenges them.
It's better if there's a rival.
Yeah,
sure.
If you think that at least they can be beaten.
It's like General Zod with no Superman. What's the fun of that? There's no fun.
Right, before we get out of here, you are privy to what happened, the Charles Oakley stuff.
Oh yeah,
with Adam Silver and Michael Jordan. Where are we?
The power of me, and I take full credit for this because I wrote it on Monday saying, Adam Silver, you need to step in and do something about this.
Well, it proves he's alive. Breathing.
So he brought him in yesterday, and I don't know. Adam's not the type to read someone the riot act, but I think he made it very clear that this is not acceptable, and this has to stop.
He said it was beyond disheartening.
This has to stop.
What the whole scene with Oakley. Yeah. But how did Jordan?
Well, Jordan is very close to Charles, very close friend of Charles, and I think Jordan's got incredible gravitas as an owner, and people respect him. And so I was a little surprised he couldn't get on the golf street and come up in person, but he got on the phone.
Well, maybe, maybe he had a golf.
Maybe he had a thing. But he got on the phone and I think tried to be a peacemaker and tried to find common ground with Charles as his friend and with and with Dolan as a fellow owner. So I think that's why he was involved.
So so that's the Camp David Accord.
We'll see. We'll see. I mean,
will Oakley be? I mean, can Sprewell go back to Milwaukee where he belongs?
Probably
looking for his old yacht
on the boat. Yeah. I think his time is his usefulness has been served. So, I don't know that you'll see the photo op of them sitting together at a game, but he will probably be allowed in the building, I would imagine.
What did you make when you saw it?
It was horrible.
I mean, you know Oakley.
I do. I like Chuck. Charles.
Everybody
Charles.
Likes
Charles.
Him.
Yes, he's not very likable guy.
And he's out of control in that moment.
He was angry, You know, and I think his anger was not so much at Dolan. See, I don't know the exact makeup of the people that were there, but I suspect at least one or two of those guys are guys that were there when he was playing and know him. And he probably got tickets for their kids for a game. And so his anger was, you know me. What are you doing? Get out of my face.
Right.
I'm not some guy. I played here. You know, you know who I am. And it was, I think that was the anger was there as much as anything else. And then, you know, and as much as I think he was wrong, you can't put your finger in somebody's face. That's just not, that's going to cause a reaction. It just is. and you should know better. And so that was his fault.
How is Dolan regarded in the league?
Not very well. Not very well. I mean, because the decisions that he's made have been bad ones, and he's meddled, and he hasn't managed that franchise very well. And for all the anger is because they make so much money. I mean, they are they are one or two every year in revenue, every single year, no matter what the product is. They're one or two in revenue, and they managed to squander it and mismanage it and make bad decisions. And so I think people respect the fact that he's a good businessman in that sense. They don't respect him as a basketball guy.
Isaiah Thomas, Phil Jackson, disasters, both disasters in the front office. Just disasters.
Bad. It's been bad. It's been bad.
And I mean, if you're the NBA, I'm a New Yorker, so it would be easy for me to take the position you need the Knicks to be great. You don't. You need Boston and Los Angeles, but you don't really need New York because when the NBA was beginning to flourish, you didn't really need the Knicks. But this is bad.
Well, it's bad because they could be better. They've got a very good young player in Porzingis. He's really good. And it'd be a shame for him to waste 7 or 8 years there not doing anything, never winning anything.
Does Dolan enjoy owning this team?
Yeah, I think so very much.
So the poor results, the criticism, this debacle.
I think there
it's
are
not taking.
I think there are lots the of luster. Similarities between Dolan and other owners.
I was wondering that. What is this telepathy you seem to share?
There are commissioners in certain leagues over the course of time who would force out an owner like that.
Yeah, but you can't. It'd be very hard to force. I mean, the unique circumstances of Donald Sterling aside, you can't do it. It's hard to do unless you got him on tape saying stuff, you know, and you can't, even if you do, I don't know if you can do it now. So it's tough. It's hard.
All right. We will take a break. When we come back, we will shift gears completely. We will go into from the disaster of the Knicks to the disaster of politics. We'll bring in John Heilemann when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Here's the MeUndies ad. Picture a world where putting on a new pair of underwear isn't just fresh, but you're stepping into a better day. Think about it. Underwear is the first thing you put on, the last thing you take off. Why would you settle for anything less than the best-feeling underwear on the planet? MeUndies focuses solely on producing the most comfortable underwear you've ever experienced. For the price of two cocktails, MeUndies will deliver your new favorite pair of underwear right to your doorstep. Better day guaranteed. Try them on, and if they're not the most comfortable, best-feeling undies you've ever had, they will refund you and let you keep your first pair for free. Included in the price is a sweet touch of, and here's where we're going pronunciation-wise, Modal, a special fabric made with best-in-class raw materials that are scientifically proven to be 3 times softer than cotton. These uber-cozy undies are sold exclusively on the MeUndies website, where you will enjoy free standard shipping in the United States and Canada. And for a limited time, everyone in this particular audience will get 20% off their first order. But you have to go to our special URL, MeUndies.com/TonyK. With the MeUndies Better Day Guarantee, you have nothing to lose. Don't wait any longer. Go to MeUndies, that's MeUndies.com/TonyK right now for 20% off your first order. That's MeUndies.com/TonyK.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show. The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is sent to us by Cyrus Jaguri. The title of the song is Gone. It's from the Cyrus and Charlie Trio. The two frontmen in the band are Cyrus and Charlie. We're two friends from Gaithersburg, now residing in Frederick and Germantown, respectively, who have known each other since elementary school. The third member is the combined spirit of the drummer from Spinal Tap, who died in a bizarre gardening accident, and the drummer who choked on vomit, the source of which remains unknown to this very day. Always remember you can't dust for vomit. The music that we get is wonderful, and we're trying to figure out a way to give you full music at the end of the show. John Heilemann joins us now. And he was on with us very early and was a complete revelation, except for the F-bomb that he threw in and we had to edit out. But he was a fabulous, fabulous guest. At that point, he and Halpern were doing the PTR ripoff show, which we admired very much. That show is not with us anymore. Can you just briefly tell me what happened? Because I just assumed that that show would be on for a while because it would find an audience.
One of the things I was, Tony, great to be back with you. One of the things I was most looking forward to this morning was being called out for the F-bomb, although I think it was more than one.
It was a shocker. It was a shocker. So
I think it was more than one, and yeah. I was sternly warned and admonished that if I wanted to come back on the podcast, that I should try to refrain from doing that.
Well, only because nobody minds. You're allowed to curse. I mean, in the podcast world, you can do this all the time. I just have, you know, I've got bosses and a reputation to uphold, and I don't curse, so we cut it out. It's all right. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
I mean, there
yeah.
are some people, for example, you did it artfully, and you did it very well. I think of, for example, the best cursor on TV that I know of, because he works himself up into such a rage, is John Oliver. I think he does it great. There are other people who just do it to show off, and I don't think it's that good. You know what I mean?
I totally know what you mean, and I'm basically going to try to avoid doing it today.
It's okay.
Unless you provoke me to the point where my fury can't be contained.
I'm not, no, welcome. Yeah, I won't do that.
Welcome.
No.
I won't do that.
So what was the first question? What are we actually trying to talk about here? Oh, the PTI ripoff show.
Yeah, what happened? We liked it.
With all due respect, we liked it too. It was great. We basically, when we went to Bloomberg to do it, the idea was that we were going to do it for the election cycle for 2016.
Oh, okay.
So as you may be aware, the election cycle ended with a rather large bang and a rather unexpected outcome that we're still all kind of grappling with today. But we came to the end, and so we said at the end, right, we went through the inauguration and then said sayonara.
Oh, because you could, I'm sure you could place that somewhere else if you wanted to, I would assume.
Well, are you offering us a job, Tony?
I have a podcast empire.
On the podcast network?
Sure, you can do that. You can do it for this show stinks LLC. You can come do it. Sure, absolutely. When we put the podcast studio in whatever Chad's will be named at that time. I did catch up with you, though, a number of times during the election cycle on the circus. Which was on Showtime, if I'm not mistaken, right?
It was. It certainly was.
And how did you like doing that? That was pretty cool. That was almost real time.
It was. You know, it was one of the great. I have to say, we really loved doing With All Due Respect, and taking on the circus while we were doing With All Due Respect was kind of an insane thing because, as you know, doing a daily television show or a daily podcast or a daily whatever is a lot of work. But we really thought, like, the circus, the idea was to try to do, as you said, you use the word real time, right?
It was close.
It was, you know, as close to real time as you could get. It was a weekly show that we basically shot in the week that, you know, the show was aired on Sunday night on Showtime, so we shot it all week long. So we'd start shooting on Monday, we shot Monday through Saturday, and then put it on Showtime on Sunday night. So that's pretty close to real time. I don't know what it would be more real time than that. And it was to try to do a half hour long, sort of almost feature with the quality and production values of a feature documentary, and have a little bit of perspective on the week's news. But shoot it with, we had four or five camera crews out on the campaign trail with us, with me, Halperin, and our third partner, Mark McKinnon, and then kind of roll up the week, give you kind of a behind-the-scenes look from the campaign trail about what was going on, and then, you know, chop it up and put it on the air on Sunday. It was an incredibly hard thing to make because of the demands of trying to, you know, have, if you have, you know, somewhere between 3 and 5 camera crews shooting 6 days a week and then trying to edit that on the fly and get it on to Showtime on Sunday night. It was really, really, really hard. I don't think anybody's ever tried to do anything quite like that before, but we were super proud of it by the time we were done.
I know. I think you should be. I mean, I tuned in. I liked that. I did like that show a lot. I don't want to bury the lead because eventually we're going to have to get to Michael Flynn and all of this craziness.
Yeah.
But I am given a note that said, and this is more important, I guess, particularly with Aldridge here.
Wow.
You were at the Oakley game?
Oh, wow.
You were there?
No.
Oh,
not true.
I was told you not were true. At the Oakley game.
No, I was at the game after the Oakley game.
Oh, you were at the game after the Oakley. Okay.
Yes, which was in its own way not nearly as surreal and not nearly as strange, but the evident backlash in the room against the Knicks organization, and particularly against Dolan, who was there on that night. This was last Friday night. Was almost as entertaining as the Oakley spectacle itself, was watching the fans rebel against Dolan for having done to Oakley what he did the game previous.
So that was in the most recent game, of course, he dragged out every ex-player that he could find who needed a job. In the game you went to, did he try to bring out celebrities or like singers or dancers to sit with him?
He did. He was seated, in his customary seat on the baseline. He brought with him. He had for protection, basically, against the fans chanting his name and shouting invective at him. He brought with him, on one side, Adam Horowitz, Ad Rock from the Beastie Boys.
Right.
And on the other side, Katie Holmes. Who I'm given to understand occasionally attends games with them. I don't really understand the nature of the relationship there, but that was his posse that night. And it didn't really, I don't think it protected him very much from the wrath of the fans who basically spent the entire night. It was one of the worst basketball games I've ever seen in my life. The Denver Nuggets, you probably are aware that the Denver Nuggets are not exactly like a world-class basketball team.
No, but they had 23 threes last night. They were great last night, yeah.
They scored 135 points against the Knicks. On that night, and I was like, I don't even know who any of the players on this team are.
they're a terrible team, but the Knicks are really a dreadful team. So I guess Dolan at some point, who's an American icon? Where, like, I guess he could bring out
Tom Hanks.
I guess he could have Tom Hanks sit next to him, but Tom Hanks wouldn't sit next to him because Tom Hanks is probably a basketball fan. All right, let me move on to Flynn. News this morning in the sense of the news fairy sprinkling dust on everybody. Mike Flynn resigns late last night around 11 or so, even though it is said that he had the full confidence of the president at about 10:15 last night. And there's stories today. Last night, I'm watching television, and Paul Begala, who I don't know what your relationship is with Begala. I think Begala is really smart and really funny. Begala was saying, if I heard this correctly, you got to watch out if you get rid of Flynn, because it's very possible the Russians have damning information on Trump, and Flynn knows it, and Flynn will spill his guts. Today, in a front-page story in the Washington Post, it is said that the Russians had damaging and damning information on Flynn himself. What was he doing in there to begin with, and what do you make of this?
Man. Okay, here we go. This is such an incredible story, and it's hard to believe that it has happened at all, let alone that it's happened within the first 3.5 weeks of a new administration. But Mike Flynn was a guy who was in a past life had risen to the level of three-star general, had huge credentials as a member of the military, had gotten to a very high level within the defense establishment in the Obama administration, and then had gotten basically forced out from that administration. He's now been forced out of two administrations in with his reputation sort of in tatters.
It's like Chip Kelly.
one a Democratic administration and one a Republican administration. We knew, given that his history in the Obama administration, there were a lot of questions around him when he kind of attached himself to Trump in the campaign and was kind of conducted himself as a surrogate for Trump in a way that won Trump's affection, but raised eyebrows among almost everyone else. You know, military people generally aren't like hyper-partisan, but Flynn was famous on the campaign trail for going out and being at Trump's side from the very beginning, leading the lock her up chant against Hillary Clinton. There were a lot of people in the military who looked askance at the way he behaved during the campaign and kind of thought he had sort of discredited himself as a national security player by being so partisan, because you don't normally see that in American campaigns. Three-star generals going out and not just endorsing a candidate, but again, leading, you know, he was so harshly partisan towards towards Clinton that, you know, you had a lot of people like David Petraeus and others in the national security establishment who thought, you know, this guy's kind of gone crazy. And so when he got appointed by Trump on the basis largely of this loyalty that he exhibited and the fierce partisanship that he demonstrated, you had a lot of people when he first got named to this job saying, this is trouble. This guy could be a problem for a variety of reasons, some of which have to do with his judgment, some of which had to do with his temperament, and also some of which had to do with the fact that he had this weird history with Russia. And these questions were raised when Trump appointed him, and you had this is like a ticking time bomb pretty much from day one. And then you had these things that took place in December, where, you know, we learned that he, shortly after the Obama administration in December, had expelled these Russian spies from the United States, that Flynn had made these phone calls. And his story, that given the timing that he called the Russian Russian ambassador, it raised, you know, these questions of, had he done something wrong? Had he done something improper? Everyone was suspicious. Everyone looked at it askance. And now we find out, you know, a few weeks later that, in fact,
right,
that he did exactly what people thought he had done, and that he had lied to everyone, including, including Mike Pence and others in the administration about it. So it's an incredible story because it does raise all these questions, which have all been floating around Washington for a long time now. The possibility that Flynn was the target of blackmail, the possibility that Trump may currently be the target of blackmail, this question of what the relationship is between Donald Trump and Russia, given the oddity of his continued sycophancy towards Putin over the course of now more than a year, is one of the great mysteries of trying to understand what's going on with Trump, and it is potentially something that could unravel the entire administration, depending on what the answers are. And we are just in the first inning now of the story, right, because of what Paul mentioned last night. This is now going to spark investigations and inquiries, rightly so, that will go on potentially for the next 2 years. And Flynn is a wild card out there in the world now, able to say kind of whatever he wants now that he's been cut loose by Trump.
Okay.
That's a long answer to your question.
I understand, though. But everybody, as you point out, everybody thought Flynn was crazy from the time he was introduced. There were three people who were in key positions. And I should stress this. These are appointed positions. You don't have to go through the Senate on these things.
Right.
So there's Flynn. There's this guy, Stephen Miller, who I just saw for the first time last week. And there's Steve Bannon. And they are that's the big three. That's LeBron and Kyrie and Love. And now one of them is gone. What do you make of the other two? Are the other two likely to unravel like the air out of a balloon in some short time like Flynn did?
I really feel for you, Tony, because I'm pretty sure that LeBron, Kyrie, those guys are going to come after you for making that accusation. I mean, the idea that you just compared LeBron James to Steve Bannon, I'm not sure that's going to go over real well with the king. All three of them had a huge amount of scrutiny on them, partly because they are all seen as being extreme in the ways that you just described. All three of them, as you said, aren't Senate confirmable. All three of them have the thing that is most important in Washington in a lot of ways in terms of the exercise of power, which is proximity to the president. Or all three of them had that. Now Flynn obviously doesn't, but, you know, Bannon and Miller are both, you know, in with Trump, have Trump's ear physically, you know, 24 hours a day, essentially, when he's not at Mar-a-Lago. The scrutiny on them is very intense. You know, you saw Miller over this last weekend did the round of the Sunday shows and said a bunch of stuff that drew a bunch of criticism, got kind of across the ideological spectrum for coming across as kind of weird and Orwellian and suggesting that, you know, going on television, suggesting that the president's power is is nearly on matters of immigration reform and securing the country are is kind of unchallengeable and you know omnidirectional. Basically, said, you know, he has total power and no one will question it. And a lot of people looked at that on Monday morning and said, wow, that's like, you know, that's autocratic kind of talk. Like, what do you say? The president can do whatever he wants and everyone needs to sit down and shut up and no one can raise any questions about it, including the judicial branch. So he's in the crosshairs now. And of course, Bannon has been all along because of his associations with Breitbart, you know, which is, has given this big platform to the alt-right and to, white nationalism and anti-Semitism and all kinds of stuff. So these are kind of, These are unprecedented characters to have in the White House. And, yes, I think there will be a lot of focus on those other two guys. But, again, given the stakes involved and given the kind of unprecedented nature of what we know even now, which is very little about the relationship between Trump and Russia, and, again, the stakes being, you know, like the future of the world in terms of national security and how the United States relates to its main geostrategic adversary on the world stage, that it seems to me is going to be let's not turn our eye to the other guys yet. Let's try to stay focused on this main story about which the White House is going to try to turn the page now and say, well, Mike Flynn's gone, nothing to see here anymore. Let's move on and leave this story behind. And what's happened with Flynn, and again, the continuing questions around Trump and Putin are raise so many questions that are unresolved. This is like just opened the door, it seems to me, to a whole bunch of legitimate lines of inquiry that Congress and the press are going to have to stay on now for months and months going forward.
So,
while also keeping our eyes on Bannon and keeping our eyes on Bannon and Miller.
So yeah, so to move from the very specific into the general, I mean, you spent a lot of time around Trump during the election process. You had cameras everywhere, not necessarily one-on-one with the guy, but you're around him. He's in your business. He's sort of a gold mine, don't you think?
He certainly has been. You know, the campaign was certainly one that attracted an awful lot of viewers, and he's a rich storyline for sure.
I mean every day, even as something like sitting around with the Prime Minister of Japan with the cell phone lights on, discussing what may well have been totally classified information because the North Koreans just sent out a rocket somewhere. I mean, you look at this, and every day you say, wow, this is, I can't believe this
every
is going
hour.
On, mm-hmm. right?
Yes, well, for sure. And, you know, look, I mean, he's a, I mean, somebody made the point that it's like that the administration so far has been sort of like a black hole in the sense that like all of time is collapsing in on itself. It's like we have on any given day so far in this administration, there's like more news, and not just news, but eye popping. You've never seen this before ever in your whole lifetime of covering politics or paying attention to Washington, D.C. We're seeing like six or seven things happen every day that maybe one of them would happen in 3 or 4 months in any normal administration. And everyone has the same feeling, which is that Trump's providing, there's an enormous amount of stuff to try to get your arms around. And yes, he's an incredibly controversial and polarizing figure. So, and a big larger than life figure in a lot of ways too, for better and for worse. So, yeah, I mean, he provides a lot of compelling storylines, and yet, you know, I think everyone feels a little, at the same time, it's hard to revel in that exactly when so many basic norms of kind of how things are normally done and that make people feel kind of secure about the way that the government should function, when so many of those things seem to be kind of at risk, it makes no one's able to kind of sit back and say, yeah, man, this is really good for page views and really good for ratings. Everyone feels like, you know, we got to kind of up our game here and take it as seriously as it deserves to be taken.
This is great. I can't talk about it all day, but I could talk about it every day, all day, because I've become, for the first time in many, many years, a news junkie again, and I'm watching all these shows. Thank you, John. Hope to have you on soon.
There's a lot of news. Thanks, Tony.
John Heilemann, boys and girls. Heilemann and Halpern. I've said this a million times. They wrote Game Change, which is, to my mind, right up there with What It Takes by Richard Ben Cramer as the two best contemporary political, you know, books that I've ever read. He's really good. He's really good. All right, we're going to take a break when we come back. Normally we would have news, but We're going to play trivia a little bit, unless we fail miserably. We did this last week. We played trivia. Last week, I forgot to announce. No, this week, I forgot to announce that Chad's had trivia on Monday night, and it's Tuesday morning. So
next week.
Yeah, so we'll just take the. So I don't know if there
it's
was a crowd.
It's a standing Monday night.
It is. Yeah. Okay. So we'll just take some of the questions when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Life insurance. Do you have it? If you don't, why not? It's too expensive. It's a hassle. I didn't have life insurance for a long time, and I got life insurance within the last 6 or 7 years because I just sort of found out I probably wouldn't live forever. I mean, I assumed I would live forever for a long time, but now I realize I won't. I want to make sure that everybody who I leave behind has stuff. If you don't have life insurance, what would financially happen if something happened to the primary earner? I wasn't the primary earner. I was the only earner. Okay, not primary, only. Life insurance is a good idea to protect the ones around you, but where do you go for the best prices on the best policy with the best service? PolicyGenius.com is the best online life insurance marketplace. It gives you the most accurate quotes from the top A-rated life insurance companies. PolicyGenius has placed over $5 billion in life insurances for people like you, and PolicyGenius has a very simple, user-friendly website to shop and compare all the top-rated life insurance companies and give you the best options. They have a licensed customer service team to help you find the best policy at the best price. And while you're there, check out their other insurance offerings like health insurance and pet insurance. Pet insurance. This dog is costing me millions. I should probably get that. Go to PolicyGenius.com today to save over 70% off other prices for life insurance. When life insurers compete for your business, you save money. That is PolicyGenius.com, PolicyGenius. If you can't spell genius, you're not one. Zero jargon, zero sales pressure, zero hassle. Life insurance made easy, free quotes, zero hassle, peace of mind. Don't wait. Go to PolicyGenius.com today.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show. The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is from Matt Zabrowski in Brooklyn. Here's a song he writes from a band I play with called Brother Josephus, entitled Don't Give Up on Love. We're kind of a New Orleans-flavored outfit with a Steely Dan twist. We actually played D.C. a bunch of times at the Hamilton and the Ebbets Oyster Riot. I'm a longtime Little and a freelance touring drummer. Wow, a freelance touring drummer.
Interesting.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to write into the show, but the lack of wit and hilarity of the other emailers. So I'm happy to share some of my music with you. Your pod has... I hate when people call it a pod, but they do. Your pod has really been a great source of happiness while I'm out on the road, and I do appreciate the variety of topics involved, even if I don't agree. Just don't get rid of Howard. Have a good one, guys. Mm-hmm. And Michael, as we endeavor to play all of this music at the end of every show, if people want to send in music, how do they do it?
They can send it to jingles@tonykornheiser.com.
And if they want to buy tumblers or shirts?
Tumblers, shirts, sweatshirts, everything. They can go to shop.tonykornheiser.com.
Wonderful. Okay, so as I mentioned in an earlier part of the show, yesterday I forgot to plug trivia at Chad's, which is probably for the best because a lot of people are writing in and saying this is an infomercial to begin with. But I did want to build a crowd on Monday nights because Monday night's a slow night at a bar.
Sure, sure.
So there's trivia at Chad's every Monday night, which starts at 7:30. I forgot to plug it. But last week, we came in here on Tuesday and we tried to answer some questions, and we've not seen the questions. We don't know the questions. And I thought, David, I think it's fair to say that Liz won resoundingly.
Liz crushed you.
Liz won resoundingly last week. So David and I will try and do better this week.
Try to keep up.
Yeah.
Well, now I'm on edge.
Michael, why don't we do a few questions?
So we're taking their six rounds and condensing it to just a handful of questions. So this will be a mix of what I would call easy, medium, and more difficult questions.
Okay.
We'll start with, what flower shares the name of the first level of Girl Scouting?
I was never a Girl Scout.
Is
Girl Scouting, wasn't the first level, was not brownies?
I thought it was brownies, too.
Brownies might be before Girl Scouts.
Yes.
Okay. So
your daughter was a brownie for a short time.
Right, but I don't know about Girl Scouts.
You're the
resident girl.
You have
a clue. And I was a brownie.
Were you not a Girl Scout?
So I clearly was placed ahead of the...
You were never a Girl Scout?
No, I think it just seemed, yeah, I was kind of burnt out at Brownlee level. The novelty of the badges, it wasn't enough to keep me in it.
David,
but
were your boys Boy Scouts?
Flowers.
No.
Were they Cub Scouts?
No, I've never done any of that.
Michael, were you a Cub Scout? You were a Cub Scout?
No,
you?
But thanks for remembering.
Oh, okay.
That's your own child.
I don't want to get too carried away here, but I felt as a child that I had certain things in my background that were going to preclude me from being either a Cub Scout or a Boy Scout. So I was never as enthusiastic about them. Although that didn't stop me with country clubs, did it?
No.
It did not.
Okay, so let's think this through. What is
flowers.
Flowers. Yes.
Geranium. Are they called geraniums?
Good guess.
Are
but
we
no.
all going to get a guess before you tell us the answer?
Sure, you can get a guess. Why would you go with
a potted plant?
With just a long syllable flower to start. It's the first level of Girl Scouts.
Rose. Tulip.
What? I'm going to say
you've
daisy.
Had multiple guesses. Yeah,
what?
Shouting
daisy.
Out flower names.
Daisy. Let's say daisy.
Daisy.
I
mean,
oh, I know. Say. Oh, I was going to say
no,
daisy.
No, no, I wasn't going to say daisy. I'm thinking of a tulip.
Daisy.
No!
Oh, again.
You're kidding.
Every
again.
Time
it just
she wins.
Sounds friendly. It doesn't sound friendly.
The robot Bender from Futurama was named after a character from which John Hughes movie?
Oh, was that 16 Candles, I think?
Oh. Okay.
No, 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 no. The other one where they're all
they're school,
in detention.
And they're in detention.
Breakfast Club? Yeah, the Breakfast Club.
Breakfast Club. That's my guess.
And
too.
it's the principal. He's the Bender. The principal Bender in Breakfast.
John Bender from the Breakfast Club.
I'm 0 for 2.
No,
I'm
I got
just
that.
Awful.
No,
we share that.
You're not awful yet.
Okay.
You're trending awful. You're not awful yet.
Your thoughts are too deep for this.
Which of the five Great Lakes is the deepest with an average depth of 489 feet?
I think it's Michigan.
Okay, here are the Great Lakes. And we're going to have to make a turn here. Ontario, Michigan,
Holmes,
Huron, Erie, and
Superior.
Holmes.
H-O-M-E-S, Holmes.
I'm going to say Huron is the deepest.
I think it's Michigan.
Well, I'm going to just pick something else to be
what,
contrarian.
Like Tanganyika?
No.
What are you going to pick?
No. What did you guys pick?
I picked Huron.
Michigan.
Ontario.
You're incorrect. Superior.
Okay.
Oh. That's why it's named Superior.
So, nobody got that.
Which river did George Washington cross on Christmas night in 1776?
Assuming the Potomac. Oh, I would have said the Potomac.
Delaware.
Okay. The answer is the Delaware River.
I got that wrong.
Yeah.
He threw the quarter across the Potomac.
Oh, is that what it was?
There's a painting
yes.
of this.
Yes.
In the Everly Brothers
song. I have a house in Delaware, if that helps.
Yeah. How's that gaspel out there? Yeah. In the Everly Brothers song, Wake Up Little Susie, what time does Susie and
4
her boyfriend
o'clock.
Wake up? Well, we'll go to the next one. Yeah. What is...
Don't cut me on 50s rock and roll. Yeah, it's 4 o'clock and we're in trouble deep. Wake up, little Susie.
What is 555 in Roman numerals?
Oh, it's 550. Yeah,
DLV.
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 Yeah.
Well, not DMV.
Not DMV.
Not DFL, baby. No.
How am I doing?
You're ahead.
Liz, you're ahead again.
I
always.
Shouldn't have showboated.
Oh, you are spiking the ball.
That was really bad form.
How many tablespoons are in a cup?
In a cup.
Wow.
How many tablespoons?
How many tablespoons are in a cup?
Don't tell me that's a chick question.
All right, I'm going to take a shot. I'm going to take a shot at 8.
12.
Had I stayed with Girl Scouts, I would have known this.
I would have known this, yes.
I think it's more than we would think. So, 24.
The answer is 16.
Wow.
So nobody got that one.
No one got that
I was
that
closest
one.
Without going
you
over
were good.
It. Does that count?
Yes.
It's a good thing we cook on this show. Yeah. Which actor made his film debut in the 1958 movie The Crybaby Killer?
Robert Duvall.
The Crybaby Killer, 1958?
Wow. 1958.
It's not Johnny Depp.
No.
He wasn't alive.
I'm going to say Jack Nicholson.
No, that's way early. The Crybaby Killer.
Paul Newman?
That's pretty good.
No,
well,
he was
right.
in movie. HUD was before that, wasn't it?
I thought he was in the mid-50s when he started, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Steve McQueen.
Jack Nicholson.
Oh.
How would you get that? How could you get that?
Because he had a very dark beginning.
How could she get that? Are you cheating?
I think she went to Chad's last
night. Sitting next to Michael.
No, how dare you
disparage us
me?
Again, these questions have been sealed in an envelope.
Things, like,
why aren't you on Jeopardy? Go on Jeopardy right now.
I love Jeopardy. That is my favorite show.
Which U.S. president preceded President Chester A. Arthur?
Garfield.
Garfield the cat?
Yeah. Odie.
Wow. Garfield.
All right.
I know in my assassinated president.
In the movie Speed, dropping below what speed will detonate 60. The bomb 55. On the bus?
It was 55, yeah.
Was it 55? I thought it was 60. No? It's 55?
I don't know.
No guess?
Yeah, I'll take a guess. 45.
50.
Okay.
Oh, we all got that wrong. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, that was a little tricky.
That's a Keanu Reeves movie.
Yeah.
That was Sandra Bullock. That was a good movie.
She was the wheel lady.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. That was a good movie.
Yeah. Wildcat.
The first escalator was a temporary amusement ride at what amusement park?
Palisades Park.
Oh, that's a good guess.
That's my guess.
Wow. Wait, Coney Island.
Ooh, that's a good guess. That's a really good guess.
Couldn't have been Disney World.
MacArthur Park?
That's melting in the dark, all the sweet green icing flowing down.
What does that
Someone
mean?
Someone left a cake out in the rain. I don't think that.
The song lasts 23 minutes. Yeah. I would say Coney Island, but Liz took that, so I don't know.
Well, if you believe in Coney Island, say Coney Island.
You made me sound like such a hussy.
You're smarter than me.
Liz took it.
Coney Island, what the hell? Yes, I'll say Coney Island.
Coney Island.
There you go. So I share one with Liz, who is now 83,000 points ahead. Don't bet much in Final Jeopardy, Liz. You got it in the bag.
So Aldridge is about to be relegated. He's going to lose the first division status.
This is our last question.
Okay.
All right.
This is one that all of my ninth graders could answer. In Shakespeare's Macbeth, which character returns as a ghost?
Banquo.
I second that. Third it.
To be thus is nothing but to be safely thus. Our fears in Banquo stick deep.
Beautiful. I bet you were quite a teacher.
All right, that was trivia.
And now I read trivia questions.
Did I have one thing I wanted to do in news? Oh, the California Dam story. Are you up to speed on the California Dam story?
I just know that there's a lot of issues going on with it. And they had to evacuate a number of people, right?
It didn't actually collapse. It was about to.
Like 150,000 people. Not a number of people, 150,000.
But it didn't collapse, right? It
wound up
not collapsing.
But it's not in the clear yet.
No, but I thought last night they said it was like imminent and it didn't actually happen.
This is a remarkable thing. For the last 2 to 3 years, California was in a significant drought, an actual terrible drought. And if you saw all the infrared pictures of California that they showed, you would see that it had become arid. And now they've had all of this rain.
Yeah.
And the snowpack in the Sierras is such that they're not going to have to worry for years to come. And now they're inundated. Now you could say that this proves climate change. I don't know if it does or doesn't. But I know that you had these real fears that California, which is in essence, you know, the breadbasket of America. I mean, they grow a tremendous
amount. Sixth largest economy on earth.
Yeah. And that it was going to
dry. Largest economy on earth.
Dry up. Imminently dry up. That's it. Where are we going to get food from? We're going to have to produce the food, with, you know, in
labs.
Yeah. Not grow it in the ground. Now it's fine.
Yeah.
Now it's fine. And it's...
I don't know that fine. I mean, maybe fine on the over... It sounds pretty unsettled to me, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, but I'm saying there would be enough water now. Yes. There'd be enough water now that you could grow. You could go back into farming and you wouldn't have to, you know, make everything into a maze, you know, and bring kids in for a buck a shot to try to find their way out of a maze or something like that.
I do have one story. Are you familiar with Kim Jong-nam? The older brother of Kim Jong-un?
No. Well, I didn't know there was older brother.
Yes.
Why didn't he get it?
He was supposed to be the successor. He was supposed to be the successor. He fell out of grace.
Not
and
dumb,
I will tell
like
you.
Everybody
with
says?
The father? Or
yes,
the
with the father.
Son.
Yeah, this was in the early 2000s. Do you think it would be like a sex scandal or he was trading secrets to the West? No.
Now he's making jeans in California?
He was caught in Japan on a fake passport trying to go to Tokyo Disney, and that led to his disgrace.
Are you making this up?
No, this is 100% true. This is from your Washington Post, this story. So he was in disgrace. This is real news. Yes, I will self-investigate this if I need to. So he fell out of disgrace, and now it's being reported that he has been killed by two female agents at the Kuala Lumpur Airport on Monday night by two women who apparently stabbed him with poison needles and then fled the scene.
Is his brother allegedly behind this?
Well, I'll let you draw that conclusion. Well, wouldn't you
sense. Think he got on the boat when this happened?
Kim, why don't you go fishing? Sit in the front. Say a Hail Mary. It'll be fine. Yeah, so I think he's also Kim Jong-un is like off to his uncle or something like that. So this would fit the pattern. And the lesson is, if you're part of the, you know, succession to power in North Korea, don't try to go to Tokyo Disney. No.
Well, there's another thing. I mean, that this is, putting kidding aside, that they're terrifying. You don't know what this guy's going to do. You don't know what that guy's going to do.
And I don't know whether this is true, but I know there was a story a while back that somebody fell asleep in a meeting and he machine gunned that person to death. That's the sort of stories that are coming out of Pyongyang. There you go. There's your news.
All right. What we will do is come back with Old Guy Radio, and Adam Ferrara will join us tell us about appearing on Criminal Minds. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is a SeatGeek ad. Buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long time. It's always been hard to find the best deal for that game or show you want to go to. And none of those older ticket sites want to change that. But SeatGeek is different. They have come along and created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. SeatGeek does all the price comparison for you by searching multiple ticket sites and ensuring that you get the best possible deal. SeatGeek does all the work and you save time and money. And SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck. That's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. You will immediately see any underpriced seats and be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. Best of all, my listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. So to get your $20 rebate on tickets, one, you download the SeatGeek app, SeatGeek. Two, you go to the settings tab and you click on add a promo code. Three, you enter the promo code Tony, T-O-N-Y. And four, SeatGeek will send you $20 after you have made your first ticket purchase. So download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code Tony today.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Old Guy Radio for the day. In honor of Valentine's Day, is the late, great Sam Cooke and Cupid. In terms of critical commentary, this is a pop tune. It's okay. It doesn't speak to the heart of Sam Cooke and how great Sam Cooke really was. Mm-hmm. And Sam Cooke is one of those people. It is said of many people that they die too young. Sam Cooke died ridiculously young. I mean, I think he was in his 30s. And Sam Cooke's body of work would have been spectacular. He could do pop songs very easily. He could also do real serious music. He was great. I would say that when people talk about the Mount Rushmore of American popular music, his early death prevented him from being right at the top. So he's on that second tier.
33 years old.
Yeah, it's preposterous.
Wow.
And it was shot. Yeah. It was an extramarital situation.
Yeah, they don't know whether he was set up by people at the hotel, it was a terrible situation.
Yeah. I mean, like Marvin Gaye was shot and killed. Gaye was much older than that.
Yes.
His father.
That's a bad circumstance. Yeah. But Marvin Gaye went through two full phases of his career.
Right, sure,
he was great in both.
And
Sam Cooke did not have that chance. All right, we move away from that. Adam Ferrara joins us now, which is a great way to bring in a comic by talking about the shooting death of great singers. You are in California. Tell us why you're in California.
Oh, I'm actually in I'm in San Francisco in my in-law's garage because everyone's sleeping.
It's early.
And oh my God, Sam Cooke was shot. Did you hear? No, I'm playing a Cobb's Comedy Club. I just played this weekend, so I stay up here at my in-laws. And I was working, and Nigel said, to call in. I haven't spoken to you in a while. How you doing, my friend? How you feeling, by the way?
I was bad for about, I was on my back for 3 full days, and yesterday I came into work and thought I was better, but by evening I had regressed, and I think I'm a little better today. I think it'll, the doctor said it would probably take a week. I didn't believe that, but it'll probably, full recovery take about a week. I was told, Nigel told me you were shooting Criminal Minds.
Oh, yeah, I was. I shot, we wrapped up, I think, Thursday, and I came up here Friday to work. Yeah, we shot Criminal Minds. I did a drama last week, which is weird, because after I do, like, any kind of drama, it always takes me a day to wrap myself back up, because I'm not used to, I played a father whose kid gets abducted, so you got to commit to that emotional state.
Right.
And you got to go, I got to go through my defenses, you know, like, because if something feels uncomfortable, my first instinct is to make people laugh.
Yes.
You know, right. Yeah. So. Emotionally, to get to where I need to go, I got to go past that, and then all kinds of monsters come out after that.
Okay, so you have to catch me up. Everything is derivative of something.
Sam Cooke's dead. Marvin Gaye's dead.
Right. Okay. Is Criminal Minds the offshoot of NCIS, Law and Order, or CSI? Because everything else is.
No. Criminal Minds is CBS. It's Joe Mantegna.
Oh, I like him.
Yes, I do. Very good.
Yeah,
I like him, Joe Mantegna.
Yeah, it's another procedural, but the place, it's about 12 years, I think, they've been on the air. Wow.
Yeah, I don't watch any of those things. As you know, I don't watch that. Are you acting full-time? You're not acting full-time, are you?
No, I go back and forth between stand-up and acting and driving cars real fast. But the first time I did drama, I get my first dramatic role on Law & Order. This is when Law & Order was on Network, when it was 10 o'clock NBC,
right.
And it was big event. So I get my first dramatic role. I call my mom and dad. My mother goes crazy because she watches that show, you know, and she invites, I tell her the night it's going to air. She invites all the girls from Marjan come over to watch.
Good, good.
10 o'clock, they stay up late, they nap during the day. My mother makes a lasagna. Everyone's in the basement. It's a big event. So she's wearing a corsage.
Oh, great.
They sit down. My name comes on the screen. Everybody claps. I walk on the screen and I'm playing a pedophile.
Oh, let's do the family proud.
Oh, silence. They said deafening silence. No one said a word for the rest of the hour. They got up. They left. My mother called me. I was in California. She goes, what the hell is wrong with you? I can't show my face. I made your father bring the pails out to the curb. I can't be seen in the neighborhood anymore.
That's so great. That's so great. Yeah. The notion that you would wear a corsage. Fantastically funny movie with Peter O'Toole, where he's making a comeback on the Sid Caesar show.
My favorite year. I love that movie.
Where they have the dinner, and one of the women wears her wedding dress.
Because she's so excited.
Yeah, it's such a great movie, My Favorite Year.
I'm not an actor. I'm a movie star.
So that was the first time that you were ever on a television. I mean, you've done a lot of different television shows.
That was the first time I ever did drama. So, like, when they see you do stand-up, you know, they saw me do like Letterman and Leno and stuff, so it's funny. You're not going to be a dirty criminal, but they never entered their head that I would be the bad guy. So I think that's what shocked them.
I think that's a wonderful story. Playing a pedophile, that's a wonderful story. I need to ask you a couple of things. One, just in general terms, in my house, whenever I walk into my house now, and the TV is on. And I think this is the product of upper middle age to aging women. Sure. The Hallmark Channel is on. It's unbelievable.
I got to lower my voice because my mother-in-law is here. Yeah, it's on here in the kitchen.
The Hallmark Channel, it's a revolving door of about 20 terrible movies starring all the same thing where right triumphs in the end and everybody marries it's just they're awful.
I know, they're watching this stuff today. Murder, She Wrote is more edgy.
It's
on a loop in this house for Kelly Ripa, then they go back and then it's Turner Classic Movies and then and then I go to bed.
This is every day I walk into my house, essentially the same movie is on the Hallmark Channel. It's always sort of a winter scene and people who used to date and are they going to date again? And there are these pregnant pauses where he goes, he said that? And yeah. Everybody looks so good all the time. And 5 minutes in, you want to shoot the TV like Elvis, right?
I know. The guy can't take it. The garage sale mysteries, I think, is one of them that they're watching here.
Awful.
The lady from Full House is solving crimes.
Yes, it's just dreadful.
It's terrible. And that just compounds my depression because football season is over, so I'm a mess.
Right. I am bereft of life without football.
When season's on, I actually plan my trip. I have to take the JetBlue flight from New York to L.A. on Sunday night, so I get the game. I get the Football Night in America on the plane.
Yeah. Right.
And you know, I got the headphones on, and I'm screaming like it's my living room.
Well, you know.
I mean, I've had flight attendants come over and go, sir, we can't have this. I go, you're absolutely right, running the ball.
It takes a while to get used to not having football. I mean, it's a great ending. It's a great ending for Brady, but.
Oh, yeah.
Well, for you, I'm a Jets fan. That second half, I was like a Vietnam vet watching Platoon. That was a mess. You think Kyle Shanahan's father was mad at him for that call?
It was. Yeah.
You know when when he gets mad, his face gets red.
It's really red.
When
yeah.
one eye pops out.
Yeah.
Did you ever see him get mad? It's like that white whale took my leg.
Yeah. I guess that's tough. I guess if you're a Jets fan, you loathe New England. I guess. I mean, I was a Jets fan before New England mattered. You know what I mean? Mm. I mean, when I was a kid, there were the Boston Patriots in the AFL, and then they became the New England Patriots.
They were terrible.
And they weren't any good for 30 years, so it didn't matter. So, amazingly enough, even with that Jets fan in my history, I don't begrudge them because I guess, Adam, I saw Goodell as the villain in this, so I was happy. I was happy the Patriots won.
This is how torn I was, too, because I did, too. And injustice just bothers me, and I just thought they went off the end, and I think they were off the deep end, and to just what they did to him. And I'm like, oh man, don't make me like Brady. What are you doing to me?
Yeah.
So I had to make a choice, but I was just like, yeah, okay, listen, when no one's looking, I'll say good for you, but I can't really adapt to rooting for Belichick and the flash dance hoodie and the mumbling. So grow up. Stop it.
Look, you know, I've said this a lot. I dealt with him for 3 years on Monday Night Football, and I hated every moment I was with him. But he is pretty bright. I mean, when he talks about snap face, he knows exactly what all of these things are. He's smarter than your average bear. He is. He is.
Look, I can respect him, but I don't have to, you know, he's the evil empire, in my opinion.
I understand that. So Nigel tells me that not my obsession, because I'm not obsessed yet, but my desire to get my hands on a 1960 or 61 Edsel Citation, that you might be able to help with this.
I'm trying to talk you out of it, to be honest.
Really? Why?
I mean, if you want a car, I could probably... Well, because first of all, you got a restaurant, you got the abandoned house next door, and you want an old car.
Well,
who's
could...
your financial advisor, Lenny Dykes?
might be a mistake, but I could put the old car right in the middle of the uninhabitable house.
There you go.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, first of all, I think the Edsel was only made 2 years. Like, it was 58.
58, 59, 60. But partial run in 60. And the Citation was there. They had four models. The Pacer, the Ranger, one other thing in the
Corsair, I think.
The Corsair, was that it? The Citation was the top of the line. And that's the one we owned. So
yeah, that's the two big wheelbase one, I think, was the Citation and the... And the Corsair, and the smaller wheelbase, I think, was the Ranger and the Pacer. But, yeah, I mean, you want it because of an emotional attachment, I'm guessing, right?
Yes, it's not like I want to drive it to California. No,
but it's like...
As a trophy. I want it as a trophy. Yeah, that's all.
Yeah, like a serial killer. You take, like, an ear or something.
Yeah, sort of. I hadn't thought of it quite like that, Adam, but maybe.
Well, it wasn't a great car. It wasn't. First of all, it was overhyped. And
it was
the wrong car at the wrong time because...
Right. Right.
There was like a little recession, I think, in 57, and that size car didn't sell well. And it had a big motor. I forget what motor was in it, but it only ran on premium gas, and the operating cost was a lot. And it was ugly. I mean, did you see the face of the thing with the grill? That I think Fabissima putum is as your people put it.
That's how white people put it. The line that was used the day, right when it was coming out, was that it looked like a Mercury sucking on a lemon. and nobody liked it. And that's another reason why I wanted, because my father bought it used. And then, and I've never understood this. I can't ask him anymore. Why did you get rid of it? I mean, he got it used and got rid of it in 2 years. And I never understood that, because it was comfy. It was big.
Yeah, it was a big car, but it was like, well, Tony, have you thought where you're going to put this thing?
I don't really have a spot for it, but if I had to buy another house and with a driveway, you know, I might do that. It's really, those things are really big. There was dual purpose. It also served as a mausoleum. It was a gigantic thing. It's really big.
Because my Buick is 18 feet, 5 inches.
Right.
Yeah, I got 3 garages at my house in California, and it doesn't fit in any of them. So I got it in my driveway under a cover.
Well, that's what I'm figuring. I'm figuring I would buy a driveway somewhere and just put it in there. I have no. It's strictly for emotional reasons. There's no point in having it. I don't even know. It's how old is it? It's 50 years old. It's more than 50 years old. I guess they run. I guess you can keep. Adam, you can keep a car. I look at Cuba. You can keep cars running, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can keep them running. I mean, look, they're tired. They parts are going to be tough to get. You can keep it running, but you're not going to drive it anymore.
No.
You're just going to put it there.
Just around the block on Memorial Day. You know, just for parades.
Don't you got a Pontiac you're trying to sell? You got a Solstice at the beach?
I do, and I want to sell that. But I don't have any emotional attachment to that. I mean, that's a little bitty car. And, I mean, I would, again, I would give this to my children, but they're physically too big. It's small, yeah. You know. I'd like to get rid of that. Yeah, I would.
I understand the emotional. That's why I got the Buick, because my uncle had that deuce and a quarter. He used to. You know, this is how cool my uncle was. He would drive me to school. He would pull over 5 blocks before we got there and let me get behind the wheel so the kids could see me roll.
That's good.
I love that.
That is a good uncle.
Yeah, he was a little guy, no neck, with a cauliflower ear.
Yeah,
and it was. And I remember once we're driving to school, and I was looking at the ear. I'm like, Uncle Tony, were you in a fight? He goes, Nah, this comes from years of listening to your aunt bitching and moaning.
That's good. All right, when can we see you on Criminal Minds? Has that been set?
I think it's the end of March. I think it's going to air the end of March, but okay. I'll let you know.
All right, to stay in touch, because you make me laugh.
I certainly will, my friend.
Thank you, Adam.
Be well,
Adam Ferrara, boys and girls. It's a pleasure.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
a pleasure, because when you're funny...
It's a professional
comedian. When you're funny, yeah. Like a lot of us think we're pretty funny, but when you get near a pro...
Yes, and he's funny at like 5 in the morning this time or something.
You understand the big gap between being funny and being a pro. It's a big deal. We'll take a break. When we come back, we will do a jingle and we will do some email. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
When this show's canceled, TK's Elba's gonna be, it's gonna be the spot outside the Browser Bout. There at Rehoboth, on the boardwalk just outside, he'll pick a spot from which he'll grouse and moan and shout. He's got a nice home. At least I assume it's gotta be. It's got a lift for when he drinks too much red wine. Drives his two-seater for nights out at the country club. It's there the trivia nights just put him on cloud 9. His Solstice has 6,000 miles and he hardly drives it anymore. Thinks he'll sell that car for more than he paid to some rube who lives at the shore.
John Fitzpatrick, the great John Fitzpatrick from Arlington, Virginia, who was rocking a Proclaimers Scottish accent in that particular song, for which we are grateful. Before we get into the mailbag, I want to say thanks to John Heilemann and Adam Ferrara for coming on with us today. I also want to thank our sponsors, MeUndies, Policy Genius, and SeatGeek. Please support them the way they support our podcast. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. And if you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. I'm going to cough a little bit. Somebody talk while I cough.
While Tony's coughing, we've put Nigel in charge of the
I'm
emails.
Back.
He's back!
From Lonnie Steves in Winthrop, Maine. We are here in Maine digging out from a snow event that have left around 20 inches of snow in many places.
Wow.
I was sitting home working on Monday and listening to the Tony Kornheiser podcast. I turned on the TV to watch the local news, and they are standing on a snowbank was Jim Cantore. I know from past Mr. Tony shows that if he is in your neighborhood, you are in trouble. Yikes. From Josh Cromwell in Moselle, Mississippi. Are you sure that the deer haven't been using the gas on occasion in the little house to keep warm?
Ah.
We don't use any gas. I have proof that we have not consumed any gas. From Neil in Rockville, I'm happy to report that not only was there a nice crowd at last night's trivia at the Shine Box, but Little's team Moose Cans hung on this week for second prize. Please thank all the owner's children for the cash, as it is ultimately coming out of their inheritances. From Kyle Tomini or Tomini in Holly Springs, Georgia, I was just curious as to what the balance of your Subway gift card was. It's about $20. I haven't used it in at least a year. I got about 20 left. From Tom Garassi, I am the retired Air Force officer who sent you the instructions on how to cook a steak in a toaster oven a few years ago. But like you, I've been fighting the local electric, not the gas utility company, over outrageous bills. My wife and I moved here to Northeast Ohio in 2012 from Northern Virginia. We're in a wonderful Del Webb community with many friends and neighbors whose houses are physically equivalent to ours. Yet we regularly get electric bills that are almost $100 a month more than our neighbors. We've constantly complained to Ohio Edison, our supplier, and we get nothing from them except the nonsense that you reported in your Monday podcast. It's absolutely infuriating that we cannot get these people to accept that there is a problem, especially since we had a house energy audit done recently that showed our house was extremely efficient. I concur that the utility companies lie to you and only want to get you off the phone. Something needs to be done. Maybe the Littles Network of your podcast can start it. From Kathy Koss, in New Mexico. Hi, Kathy Koss here from Las Cruces, New Mexico. I just listened to the Monday podcast. Wondering why the hell you even pay the gas bill. What are they going to do, cut you off? You don't even use their gas. Throw the bill in the recycle bin. What the hell? That's the kind of advice you're looking for. Right? Mike from Burke, Virginia, who is just the resident curmudgeon who hates my guts. When I saw the blurb from Monday's podcast-orama and saw that it would include you complaining about your gas bill, I was so happy. Why was I happy? Because Consumer Tony is hilarious, Tony. It combines your sense of entitlement, don't you know who I am, with your cluelessness about the world around you. I want to pay with doubloons, as my grandfather did. Ah, the bliss of Kornheiser and Fury. Mike from Burke, Virginia.
There you go.
Mark Corriere in Ellicott City, Maryland. Glad you're recovering from your flu-like illness. However, I'm not sure if Dan Lebatard is glad you're on the mend. You said he was keenly interested in your health and recovery. Could he be hoping for a Wally Pipp situation on PTI? No, because he doesn't want to do the show here.
Right.
I mean, he only wants to be in Miami, so I'm not worried about that. From Bill Isaacson, I made Nigel unhappy. I didn't see that coming. Up until now, I thought I had maneuvered through the plastic show cones with sufficient dexterity to keep Nigel happy. Nigel's unhappy with me. Now what am I going to do with my Gary Shandling MP3s? I was going to send them on Fridays. Maybe I can get an email from my brother to help me through this situation. P.S. Does Nigel like this restaurant name? Parveen Nation. Jacob in St. Louis, Missouri. When your dog is acting up, just ask her to throw some MP3s onto the end of a podcast. That should get her to shut up and leave you alone immediately. Just don't tell PETA. They might think asking her to do that is far too mean. Veiled criticism of Nigel, obviously. Kevin Koski. The only performance worse than the Grammys the other night might have been Chris Saliza talking about the Grammys on the show yesterday. Between that and the "let me tell you about my illness" segment, you guys are really killing it in that essential 70 to dead demographic. Keep up the good work. Les Matson in Lincecum, Maryland. Dear Dr. Porthauser, obviously the new name should be Chades, C-H-A-E-D-S, spelled Chade or possibly Shade. Actually, I'm not sure how you'd spell it. Better check with Nigel. And from Howie Klein in Murrieta, California. Recently, Tony mentioned that David Klecka was one of the greatest Littles of all time. Has Tony now improved the GOAT category for his own use, properly improved to gloat? Should we do that? Greatest Littles of all time, the gloats? If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
What a waste of time. God.
The ticket that you left on the chest, it must be fall again, I guess. We'll take the train away, off to another place, where grass is greener way out west. You say it's for good, but I protest. I thought I knew better. while waiting for the sun to rise and wash the clouds away. Rewrite the names, but the story's still the same. Hey, and you're gone. Lion, tell me it's best for you to go. It's hard to care because I know. When spring comes back around, you walk back into town. Straight to my arms you will go. And tell me that you miss me so. Like every time before. Rise and wash the clouds away. Rewrite the names, but the story's still the same. Hey, hey, and you're gone. The clouds away. Rewrite the names, but the story's still the same. Hey, hey, and you're gone, gone, gone.
give up on you. Now, brothers and sisters, this here is a very simple song with a very simple sentiment. And what it's saying is, if you're ever feeling that pain and doubt in your heart, but don't give up on love. If it feels like you ain't got no more hope inside, don't give up on love. As long as you got a spark within you, don't give up on love. And it's never gonna give up on you, baby.